Welcome, dear seekers of health, happiness, and harmonious cosmic humming, to season two of The Pebble in the Cosmic Pond. I am Sabine Wilms, owner of Happy Goat Productions, in collaboration with Leo Locke, our self-proclaimed purveyor of multiple perspectives. Once again, we're here to bring you old and new stories about China's healing traditions and about capital M medicine in heaven and on earth, and in the sweet spot in between. In a special twist for season two, we focus on second-generation immigrant Asian voices by, for, and about women. In the sweet spot between traditional Asian knowledge and contemporary Western embodiment. We're still noodling around the exact wording there. And yes, Leo and I do realize that we need help with this theme, since both Leo and I are first, not second generation immigrants in the US. He from Malaysia and I from Germany. And he's a guy, and I'm not Asian. So that's where our amazing interview partners come in. For our first interview, we get to chat with Ramona Dionoff. I hope I'm getting that pronunciation right. You'll see in the podcast. She'll pronounce it for you. A Chinese medicine practitioner of Indian heritage in San Diego, who is finishing up a doctoral dissertation on menstrual education at Yosan University in Los Angeles. I've had the great honor to serve as one of her advisors for her super fascinating research project, which involves her, or it involved, she's wrapping it up, interviewing young menstruators and professional providers of menstrual education from the worlds of nursing, public health, and Western and Chinese gynecology. For the last year or so, I've been so enjoying our monthly mentoring sessions because she has such powerful stories to tell and insights to share. Sad and beautiful and inspiring. So I can't wait to share them with you. Doing a ton of listening and learning, she's been contemplating how to improve the experience of bleeding with the moon for young American menstruators. Truth be told, Ramona is actually the reason for our entire season two, because the three of us had such a wonderful conversation in perfect alignment with each other on the huge potential and power of the subject that we knew at the end of about 3 hours that we couldn't stop there. We were not done. And since Ramona has to focus on finishing up her dissertation, Leo and I have simply, in the meantime, found other second-generation immigrant Asian women to interview until she's done with her doctorate and can join us again. You will be able to tell from the very first time Ramona opens her mouth that she's one of those human angels, motivated by her deep care for the young menstruators she's been encountering in her research and clinical practice. Leo and I are delighted that this podcast might help get the word out about Ramona's work on the one hand, and about the significance and potential of menstrual education from a Chinese medicine perspective, along the lines of Leo's beloved Bodhisattva math. Before we get into the conversation, I'd like to remind you to sign up, as usual, for my newsletter at happygoatproductions.com/connect to get notified of new episodes and other offerings. And please rate, review, and share this podcast wherever you can. Also, check out the show notes if you want to learn more. Thank you. Leo and Ramona, it's so nice to have you both here. our guest for today, besides Leo Locke, who is always here, is Ramona. And we were just talking about the perfect way to introduce you. And I realized, how do you really pronounce your last name? And then we were like, well, where does it come from? So will you tell us how to properly pronounce your last name and tell us the story, because we're interested in who you are.
It's a very unique story. So it's pronounced Dionot, but the unique thing about it is when my father was born back in the Caribbean, apparently my grandfather was so excited about this new little boy that he had, and he actually wrote his first name down, Dionoth, on my dad's birth certificate. And so in actuality, we have our grandfather's first name as our last name. And so my real last name is supposed to actually be Ramnoth, but it was turned into Dionoth. And so we are carrying on my grandfather's first name, which is the cutest thing to me.
So just to clarify for our audience and ourselves, your grandfather was born and raised in India, right?
It's actually my grandfather that was born in the Caribbean, and it is my great-grandparents that were actually from India that were brought over by the British as indentured slaves to the Caribbean.
Wow.
Pretty interesting. But yeah, that was back. Go ahead.
So what part of India were your great... Was your great?
I might kill this a little bit, but the name of the province is Uttar Pradesh. That's where my great grandparents are from. And so they had signed this contract with Great Britain, and the contract was a 5-year contract to do farming in the Caribbean. And so they went over, and after they farmed for 5 years, I believe they were doing either rice or sugarcane that they were farming. And after 5 years, they were set free and they were given a plot of land, and then they were allowed to live in the Caribbean. And so it's a beautiful story. My grandfather passed away maybe about 5 years ago, and my mom was cleaning out his house, and we found the actual contract that he had with the British. And it showed the 5 years that he had to do this farming for. And then it also showed the plot of land that he was given after he served his time. And, you know, I joke around with people now because, you know, India has a caste system. And so I joke around that I'm an untouchable getting my doctorates because, you know, untouchables, you know, we were toilet cleaners. We were people that, you know, weren't allowed to do anything. And, you know, I'm so grateful for the opportunity that was given to me with being that indentured slave that, you know, went overseas and ended up where they were, and me ending up where I was and I am now. And so, very grateful of this journey.
Okay, fill us in, because the way I met you was, I think I came to Yosan University, and it was the first time of teaching in person after COVID, right? That when I was there for the weekend, and it was such a, I was in such a, like an altered state of bliss, because I got to spend 3 days of teaching in a classroom with real physical human beings who were all just these, like, really, really special humans. And I remember I prepared like 120 slides for each of the 6-hour sessions. And we ended up just tossing them and just talking, because it was so precious to be in the presence with each other that it was like, no, this is too precious to just give you information. I forgot if you were in that particular group or not. It was like such an intense weekend, but I just remember having these amazing heart connections all weekend long. So I think that's where we met, because you're in the doctoral program, and then you contacted me about seeking some support for your capstone project on women's health in Chinese medicine and general education. And you're doing this incredible capstone that I'm capstone project that I'm personally just honored and delighted and overjoyed that you have chosen to take this on. And then I connected you with Leo because you are interviewing Chinese medicine practitioners. So that's how you two met. And then we're like, well, let's have a conversation with Ramona and see where it goes. So do you want to fill us in on what happened with your family between your, so how you ended up where you are now?
Gosh, it was quite the journey. But, you know, growing up in Canada and, you know, getting my education there, I initially wanted to be a math teacher, which I still find a little funny. But, you know, over the years, you know, of going through school and whatnot, my mom was the one that was like, you use your hands a lot. Like, you know, maybe you should do massage. And so I actually ended up doing massage therapy for a little while just because I use my hands. But then like that eventually led me to Chinese medicine. And I just realized as who I am, I'm a caregiver. I love helping people. And that's what eventually guided me down this Chinese medicine journey and this Chinese medicine road. And I'll never forget. That's funny that you mentioned that class, you know, that we had earlier last year in 2023. Yeah. I know we're on the first of the year right now, but I'll never forget that class with you, because as we were sitting in class talking about, you know, just the classics and whatnot, I knew right away that I wanted you to be my mentor, just because you were talking about menstrual education and menstrual health and women's health and whatnot. And I was like, this is exactly what my capstone is going to be on. And, you know, I think menstrual education is so important. And as a provider, what I am finding is when I see my patients, they're not knowing as much as I thought they would about their bodies. And I find myself teaching them about their bodies. And a lot of them would bring up questions or statements like, I never knew my body could do that. No one has ever talked to me about this before. And that's what led me down this capstone road where it's like, well, what is going on with our education right now? What is going on with menstrual education where, you know, it's not setting menstruators up to really learn about their bodies? And so that's how I ended up on this journey of doing my capstone specifically in education with reproductive health. And so, yeah. That's how I ended up on this journey.
Do you have an exact title for your capstone? If you don't have it yet, that's fine.
It's been evolving. It's been evolving, but essentially it's the importance of menstrual education and the gaps within our system, that I'm finding the gaps within our system in terms of where we're lacking in that education. So I guess, no, I don't have a title yet. It's in progress.
That's excellent.
Thank you.
And then, of course, I want to hear, I wish I could have been a participant, a mouse in the corner when you interviewed Leo, because I have not had a chance to interview Leo or really any of the people you've interviewed, but Leo in particular. So here, Leo, you take it from there. I don't know. Take it from there.
I find it fascinating to think about the education of girls and women around menstruation, the comparison between the modern education versus the Chinese lineage and the Indian lineage. Because I've heard quite a bit about, say, the Mayan people. Right, we have this famous modality called the Mayan abdominal massage, where supposedly there is this unbroken lineage of mothers educating their daughters about how to care for their menstrual health and their uterus when the girls start menstruating. And there are highly effective in helping young girls and young women and women throughout their whole lives in avoiding menstrual pain and other menstrual health-related problems. And according to some of my very personal colleagues, very close colleagues of mine, they're incredibly effective. Just as, you know, it's very complementary to the knowledge and the practices from the Chinese medicine side. So it seems to me there's a lot of wisdom, a lot of precious knowledge that's in many different cultures, traditional cultures, that have been passed from grandmothers to mothers to granddaughters, unbroken. And to me, that's a fascinating part and potentially a very beneficial part about these teachings and these practices that need to be brought out into the modern world, so it is not so dominated by whatever the current biomedical standard of education around this topic.
I agree with you 100%. You know, as I was going through my questions, as I was asking, you know, practitioners, and I was asking, you know, young menstruators, you know, just about what they have learned, where we're seeing those gaps. As I was going through just the education, the public health policies, trying to find an answer, you know, to this big question of where is those gaps, it really does come back to family support around family, you know, that generational learnings that are usually passed on, but what I'm seeing now is a lot of that is starting to get a little bit lost. That community, the community of support that you used to see in previous generations is, you know, starting to fizzle. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, it's not quite as what it used to be.
I mean, I'm listening just to Leo's presentation, and then I'm listening, and I'm a little bit more familiar with your work, Ramona, and what struck me in the difference between the way you put it, Leo, and the way you put it, Ramona, because I feel, and this has also been my experience as a mom and as somebody who was really involved with my daughter's education, because she was part of this little Waldorf school and I didn't have money to pay for tuition. So I was over there all the time helping out as a substitute teacher. And I kind of swept in and took over menstrual education. That was one of the things that I did. And my experience in America is actually that transmission through generations is in danger of being broken or has been broken. So the way you put it, Leo, I don't know what my experience could be different in Germany. I mean, German women have a very different approach to menstruation than American women. And when I was 18 and I came to America, I was like, whoa, this is really weird. But still, there was not a complete transmission around in what the way you are talking about, Leo. So I think I feel like there's a huge urgency that we are one or two generations. We're losing that tradition. We're losing that. That's my sense. That we're losing a lot of these, and maybe a lot of it is hands-on, talking about your hands-on practices as opposed to verbal.
You know, what I see, or what I have seen with these interviews that I conducted, is it's kind of 50-50. you have a percentage of parents, guardians who are expecting schools and education to fill in that information for kids. And then you have another percentage, or the other half of that, those guardians that are like taking the time to learn and teach kids about their bodies and body awareness. And it's really interesting how there is a little bit of a divide. As I was interviewing these kids, it was really interesting how some of them just was like, this is what my body does. I'm very confident. I feel really good about myself. And then I have another percentage of them were like, I guess you menstruate because if you menstruate, that means you're not pregnant. And so it was really interesting to hear these like really opposite answers that came in as I was asking. Just really floored by that.
Because to me, what Ramona is doing, what you're doing with your capstone and your project, is incredibly valuable. Mm-hmm. Because from that foundation, we can start not just one conversation, but many conversations surrounding this topic. And I think it can be extended so far out into so many significant areas of our modern lives. Meaning what I'm saying is, what we see now, one very clear trend, by looking at our immigrants to America, let's say, how within one or two generations, a lot of the lineage stories and customs and practices have, as in your words, fizzled out, diluted, or forgotten. Now, to me, that's not just an immigrant story. Mm-hmm. Because this is a lot more significant than that. Because what it means, if we look at it that way, what it's really saying is we're losing them all around the world as well. Because the predominant educational model of knowledge in North America is very likely the predominant model throughout the world. Of course, there are going to be exceptions and degrees of difference, but this model that is prominent in North America is the one that is commanding the attention of the world.
Actually, Leo, I would disagree with you.
Oh, please.
I may, which is a very scary thing to do because we all know that you are so wise.
Please.
My experience from living in Taiwan as a woman, as a young woman, I moved there when I was 18. And then when I went back and I had, my daughter was like a year and a half old or so. And my experience is that in Chinese culture, there is a very different way of experiencing menstruation, and also in particular experiencing postpartum recovery, which is why I love the fact that Ramona, you're exploring this also as a Chinese medicine practitioner, because it's one of those areas where I feel like biomedicine just really doesn't have anything to contribute. And I don't know how much of it is Chinese medicine, how much of it is just a different culture, that there is a view of menstruation as an expression of abundance, that you have an abundance of flow, that it's not a dirty thing, it's not something that makes you sick, but it's an expression of the balance between qi and blood, of being in harmony with the moon. And I could go on and on and on, you know me. But that there's just a completely different way of being in a female body. And I don't know how much of that is in biomedicine influenced by Christianity and this biomedical sense that the male body is the norm and the female body is a deviation from the norm, because women have uteruses and uteruses make us hysterical and it's the weaker sex and, you know, we're more emotional and all of this stuff. And then in postpartum, it's the same thing. I think Chinese women, and this was still the case when, I mean, my daughter, she's 25 now. So this was 20 some years ago. It wasn't that long ago. And my Taiwanese friends, and I don't know, I from my the research I've done, this is the same to a certain extent, whether you're in Singapore or in Hong Kong or in mainland China or in even in Chinese communities in the U.S., that this idea of 坐月子, of sitting out the month and really caring for the new mother, that's something that doesn't exist in biomedicine, but it is a powerful model that's really, that used to be universally common in every tradition in the world, I would think. I don't know. What do you think to that, Leo?
I would like to hear Ramona's.
Okay.
What has she observed?
Just I know you lived in Taiwan many years ago, but how long were you there? Do you mind me asking questions about your experience there?
In Taiwan? The first time I was there for almost 2 years, so that was when I was 18, so that would have been 37, I'm 55, so 37 years ago. And the second time was about 22 years ago, and I was there for 6 months.
So curiously asking, we're talking about culture experience and how it's different from potentially America in comparison to the rest of the, you know, just the rest of the world. How do you feel like it, you know, how did it feel like to you to be in that environment in comparison to being in this environment in terms of just like being a menstruating woman or being, you know, just being a female? And can you elaborate more on that experience? Just curiously asking.
Oh boy. Oh, I don't even know.
Is that
know
too deep?
That's so broad. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, for one thing, when I was there, when I was 18, I was just so young. And I mean, it was so liberating. And I mean, that was probably my happiest years of my life, living in Taiwan and because I was a foreigner and I was living in Taichung and there was not a lot of foreigners at the time. And people would like, little kids would follow me around and be you know, calling me American. And I'd be like, Michael, I'm like, you know, the Taiwanese pronunciation of Megoren, and I would be like, no, Dagoren, I'm German. I'm actually not, but for them, it was like, no, I'm not American. and then I got hired to teach English because I was, you know, for them, I was blonde. And I didn't know any English. I mean, I failed English in high school. I didn't even know how to pronounce the TH properly. And I remember like some textbook about the grocery store aisle, and I had no idea how to pronounce aisle, so I just made it up. But I'm a official Sesame Street 芝麻街 English teacher, so I made good money teaching English to poor little Chinese kids who now are running around with a nasty German accent. So it was really liberating.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I loved, I think the biggest thing that I loved about being in Taiwan that really struck me was the respect for old people. I used to hang out in the parks with old people. And that was something, that there was old people in front of the tea shops or in the bookshops, and they loved the fact that I was interested in their culture. But this is totally a different topic.
There that
when
is.
When I came.
Yeah, I think so.
There, there it is. That's what I was looking for. You know, you talking about just hanging out with older generations, I feel like that kind of community, that's what's lacking here in America, that doesn't allow that generational hand-me-downs that we get potentially in different cultures.
I was just thinking about when I came back with my daughter, I was a lot more open to learning because I was a new mother. And I take her to the playground and stuff. And that's when the older women, you know, when you're a mother with the young child and it's your first child and you don't have your own, and they were like, wow, you don't have your own relatives around. They all were giving me advice. And at the time I was doing medical anthropology. So I was doing field work. I mean, unofficial, I'm not trained in that. But so I asked them and they would tell me about all the, you know, the stews that you make chicken soup and you put in medicinal, you know, you go to like the 7-Eleven or whatever, and they have the little packages of Chinese medicine herbs that you put in with your chicken soup. And they were telling me about being careful with wind and, you know, not exposing your body. Because I'm a new mother, and I was like, what? I've never heard of that before.
Here's the education. This is the education.
Yes. And
look how beautiful. Look how beautiful that was.
And this
what
is in
an
Taiwan,
experience.
Right?
Yeah.
In Taiwan,
yeah.
You experienced this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just like dropping my daughter off at daycare and you know, talking with the other women and being at the playground, in the elevator, at the market, getting vegetables.
I think that's so lovely. I think our version of that nowadays are like, you know, what are they called? Like blogs and online posts where mommies share tidbits and whatnot. It is out there, but it's not quite like how it used to be. You know what I mean? But like it's still there. You know, we do still see some of that education being passed on and shared. And I think that's really important in, you know, reproductive health and just understanding our bodies overall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is so beautiful what you just shared with us, Sabina. And that's also what's concerning for me is that was 35 years, 37 years ago, right? Or it's 20 some years ago.
25.
Yeah. So unfortunately, there has been so many changes, economic changes, cultural changes, and educational changes in the Sinosphere, meaning in mainland China, in Taiwan, in Singapore, in Malaysia, in Hong Kong, where a lot of these Chinese live. I don't think it's the same generation anymore, because I have firsthand connection with these younger generation, and some of them were my patients. Well, whether they're from Beijing or Taipei or Singapore or Indonesia, you know, they don't have the same level of connection with their mother and their grandmother's wisdom tradition anymore. If they do, it will be viewed as more as a nagging, as something that is from the era bygone and not particular scientific and incompatible with what they can glean from YouTube, from Google, from these pundits out there. That's what I meant, because now we have a very dominating Western culture-based information dissemination apparatus called the World Wide Web and YouTube and things like that, right? So that's the difference I want to point out. That's the difference. That's the trend I'm seeing, and that concerns me. Should we end on
we're not going to end on a sad note. Ramona, I hear what Leo is saying. And I think you may be right. Of course you're right. You're always right. But Ramona, do you have other stories that we can end on a positive note? Is there some other way to think about the current situation?
The current evolution?
Yeah. How can we remedy this situation? How can we make it, now knowing where the challenges are, how can we make a difference, a positive
difference? Improving the system. Let me think of what a potential, anything that I've learned from any of those kids. So one young lady, can I talk about a specific interview that I had with one of the young ladies? I had asked her, you know, why do we menstruate, or what is the point of menstruation? And she had given me the sweetest answer, and it really stuck with me because I asked that question a lot. And she had said, it is to release what I am holding on to for that month. It is allowing my body to release. It is allowing my mind to release anything that I'm holding on. It gives me that fresh start for the next month, and just looking forward to what is next to come. And so she's just like, I always look forward now to getting my menstrual cycle. And before, I looked at it as a burden, but now I look at it as something to release and let go anything that I'm holding on to. And I was like, this is beautiful. I was so excited to hear that answer from her.
What made her shift?
She had started coming in for acupuncture, and we were trying to actually help her understand why she was feeling the pain. And so we were, you know, peeling back the layers of understanding her body. And then it was at that point that the pain released and she started having more smoother flows. And I essentially, it was helping with the inflammation that her body was experiencing, you know, when you think of the bottom line. But yeah, now she's like, it's emotional release. I'm just releasing everything. You know, just really sweet. But yeah.
Mm. Thanks. I think that's a good place. That's a much better place to stop. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of our podcast, Pebble in the Cosmic Pond. As a new experiment in our season 2 on Over the Moon, because we so love these conversations, we have decided to release new episodes not only on the new moon, but from here on out on a bi-weekly schedule. So on the new and on the full moon. We'll see if we can keep it going. The full moon episodes used to just be for the members of my Imperial Tutor Mentorship, but we all feel like this information is too precious to not share it with the general public. If you enjoyed this conversation, remember to subscribe to my newsletter at happygoatproductions.com/connect to get notified of future episodes and other offerings. And if you want access to the more specialized and truly nerdy conversations that Leo and I are having in the Imperial Tutorial, please take a look at my Imperial Tutor Mentorship, which you can find at my website at happygoatproductions.com/imperialtutor. Also, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and share our work with your friends and colleagues. And if you feel like it, continue the conversation for each episode on our Pebble in a Cosmic Pond Facebook group. Last, but definitely not least, go out there and spread some positive vibrations between heaven and earth.